Bitte sehr, nehmen Sie Platz. Guten Tag.
Hello, good morning. Please take your seats.
Es gibt offenbar auch die Möglichkeit für Übersetzung. Also, aber da muss ich mich
so
nicht
you have the chance to listen to the simultaneous interpretation, but I don't have to take care about that. Let me just say hello. Hello to all the participants of our Youth Exchange program. I assume that you, just like me, are still very much under the impression of the festivity in the Bundestag on the occasion of the Day of Remembrance. Professor Dr. Friedländer's speech was quite unique and very, very moving. I'm particularly delighted that Professor Dr. Friedländer is here in our midst this morning.
Mit Ihnen Ihre Fragen zu beantworten.
We are looking forward to him answering our questions, your questions and my question. When I looked at this CV, by the way, I had the idea that the Anne Frank Center and the Youth Exchange Program should come together in order to zoom in on the fate of children who were protected by very courageous people and protected in hiding. I think it was 1.5 million children in total that were protected and taken care of by some courageous people. And now with this Youth Exchange Program, we continue with a very well-established tradition that we consider to be very important. Since 1997, on a regular basis, we have invited young people, young adults and youth to come to Berlin on this occasion. We don't really want to define where the difference is between young people and young adults. On the occasion of our Day of Remembrance, they are invited to come to Berlin. We held the Day of Remembrance in 1995 for the first day on the occasion of the 50th anniversary in the German Bundestag. And afterwards, back then I was the chairman of one of the parliamentary groups in Parliament, and then all the parliamentary groups decided to hold a day of commemoration or a day of remembrance every year. And this has become a very well-established tradition. Maybe you also want to have a look at the exhibition that we just inaugurated next door in the hall. We always need to continue to learn our lesson from history. The director of the Holocaust Memorial from Washington that put this exhibition together in her introductory speech said, "Some were neighbors," and she quoted Voltaire in the course of her presentation. He said, "History does not repeat itself, but people continue to be the same." And for us to be able to learn from our history as human beings, we've got to analyze it and try to come to terms with it. This is why, in the course of this youth exchange program, we always try young people to meet contemporary witnesses, witnesses who had to experience this horrible time in the dark chapter of our history, and talk about it with young people. Thanks very much to Dr. Weisporter, who was also protected in the hiding. Thanks very much to Mrs. Birgit Hoffmann, Mr. Rosenberg, and Mr. Hoffmann. Thank you so much for having protected young people and for having shared your experience with the young generation. And now I'm really looking forward to your experience and your ideas, and I'm looking forward to a fruitful discussion. Dr. Becker will take over. Thank you very much, Mr. President. You already made mention of the fact that the Bundestag continues with a very well-established tradition on the occasion of which we invite young people who work at different sites of commemoration and are appointed by different organizations that fight against racism, against anti-Semitism, and do everything in their power in order to keep the history alive. They are involved in commemorative work. You already made mention of the fact that whenever possible, we hold these youth exchange programs and give them the opportunity to learn more about the fate of the guest speaker, the speaker of honor. Today it is Professor Dr. Friedländer. This is why the topic was chosen to zoom in on children in hiding. This is why Mrs. Weiss-Bohr is here and the children of Mr. Rosenthal.
Ich möchte zur, wie wir das uns vorstellen, ist, wir haben
we would like to proceed as follows. You know, I have a long pile of cards with me. These are full of questions that we jotted down yesterday for today's discussion. I know we only have 1.5 hours of time, but you know, the young people discussed this topic for quite some time now, for a couple of days, and therefore a lot of new ideas conjure up. So you can dwell on individual ideas for quite some time. We would like to proceed as follows. I think we should try to zoom in on some of the priorities in the course of the discussion. When we looked at your CV and the CVs of children in hiding, a lot of similarities occurred. Let me just start off with a introductory question to you. I read both of your CVs, which are decades apart, but the title is When the Memory Comes Back, Memory Leads You to a Certain Region, and that puts a very strong focus on a very important topic. My initial question is, were there certain periods of time in your life, or can you identify certain periods in your life that you really remembered the past very intensively and dealt with the topic at length? Is this something that happened at once and was then continued forever and ever? Or is this something that happened occasionally in the course of your time? That's a very difficult question, I have to say.
Es ist nicht etwas, das sich so gerade Linie entwickelt.
But this is not really a linear development, but the memories came back rather slowly after the war, when I went to Israel, and also in the years that followed, up until the 60s. I did not want to have anything to do at all with my memory. I didn't want to hear about anything like that. Of course, I remembered very well what had happened, but emotionally, I was not connected to the events that happened to me in the past at all. I cannot really tell you exactly when things changed.
But I think
in my doctoral thesis, I did not touch upon this topic at all. But back then, I worked at the archive in Bonn, and I came across this document. Which dealt with certain events that took place in the past and triggered something within me. It was a document dealing with an event that the Pope had participated in during the war. I was at this Catholic boarding school, the seminary, and a lot of questions that kept me busy dealt with the Catholic Church back then. I thought about a lot of religious ideas at that particular period of time. And this incident brought about fundamental changes. I saw this book about Pius XII, and slowly but surely I familiarized myself with the ideas of the Catholic religion in theory and in writing. But it's not part of my autobiography. That was much more difficult to set that up and write it down.
Herzlichen Dank. Ich frage einfach mal in die Runde, damit Let me just ask you, losgeht miteinander. Habt ihr
as members of this group, do you have any particular question concerning
so etwas?
Man commemoration, geht's einem selber, als ich mich damit memories, when do they come up?
Kinder, sind ja immer
you know, when people are being asked, how do kids remember their past when you're 6 years old, of course you do not remember a particular period of time, but it's just like a spotlight.
Eine Frage.
Do you have any questions about this particular topic? Please, over there, don't be so kind and don't forget to use a microphone. Hello, my name is Alina. I come from Bayreuth and I'm working for the Anne Frank Center here in Berlin.
Vielen Gerichtsprozessen, die es auch nach dem NS gegeben
hat, haben
immer
trials after the NS regime.
Täter im NS gesagt,
and perpetrators of the NS regime always said that they didn't know what was happening or they didn't remember any longer
gemacht haben und haben
what they had been involved in.
Mitbekommen von der
they
Judenverfolgung
said that they
oder,
didn't know that much about the persecution of the Jews.
Gesagt,
this morning in the course of your presentation you said that everybody
ist.
Knew what was going on. What's your take on that?
Leute,
how do you react if some people say, who for example worked
haben,
at a concentration camp,
who
say, well, I simply did my job, but I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't know what happened to the Jews.
Darf ich Sie alle bitten,
My country asks you to speak slowly and clearly, because, you know, when you get older, it gets a bit difficult to hear what people are saying. But Mr. Becker is helping out. You know what? I made mention of this aspect rather succinctly in the course of my presentation. In 1942, at the latest, in the course of
43,
millions, if not 10 million of people in Germany knew what was going on exactly. Not they didn't know about all the technical details, but they knew that the Jews and others were exterminated and murdered. In the course of my presentation, I tried to show that even in the newspapers you found headlines such as Jews are exterminated as an interpretation of what the Führer Adolf Hitler had expressed back then. I think people understood very well what he meant by that. And when you look at the diaries of that particular period of time, you will see that many people were very much aware of what happened. And the fact that after the war, everybody denied that he knew anything about it, and that nobody knew what was happening, is the very well-known first reaction of the Germans to these terrible atrocities and the dark chapter in the history. But things have changed slowly but surely. And I have to admit, on a personal note, from my own very personal experience, up until the Holocaust film and maybe a little bit afterwards, the Germans were still a bit reluctant. The position was a bit ambiguous. But at the end of the 80s, there were not many people around any longer who said that the Germans didn't know anything about it. It became part and parcel of German history and was also generally very well accepted. Thank you very much. Professor Dr. Friedländer made mention of the fact that the president also alluded to the censorship that was initiated by the Holocaust. One question to you. Do you remember that there were people who said that they didn't know anything about it? Generally speaking.
Yes, of course. I mean, that's what human beings are like. They like to give excuses so they can say they didn't know and then don't have to feel bad for it. But there is something else. After such a terrible time, people just wanted to survive.
Ich habe in meiner Schulzeit, ich bin 1942 geboren.
When I still went to school and I'm born in 1942.
Anfang 1961 Abitur gemacht.
And I finished school in 1961.
Da wurde nicht viel.
And that was a time
nicht von Holocaust, das Wort kannte ich
when
gar nicht.
Nobody really talked about
Man
what had happened.
The
word Holocaust was not around anyway. Nobody talked about the war or the Nazis.
Es kam erst in den 60er
that only started in the 1960s. And only very gradually. And that was when a debate started. It's part of our history in the Federal Republic of Germany. From my generation, this was what happened. I learned about everything step by step. And I had no idea when I was a child. But let me add one thing. Ignaz Bubis, when he was a child, He managed to survive the Holocaust.
Anfang der 90er Jahre Vorsitzender
in the 1990s, he was the head of the Central Council of Jews in Germany. And I knew him well. We even authored a book together in the 1990s. And he had told me that his experiences in his family, the first time he spoke about his experiences with his wife and his daughter was in the 1990s. So that means even for the survivors, it was the same. And many perpetrators preferred not to talk about it because it's difficult. But this is precisely what I found so fascinating about this exhibition. The perpetrators were the Germans, and such an exhibition could never be compiled by Germans, because the tendency would always be to say, yes, but the others helped too. But it's easy to seduce non-Germans. Mr. Friedländer talked about the Patrie of human rights, France. A German should not do that, because people would understand it in a certain way. And it must not be an excuse to blame it on France. After all, we all have our individual responsibility. There's that also an experience we've had here at a meeting of the International Youth Encounter. We had three different generations, and one of the grandchildren said, the way we talked about all of this today is the way that we never did it within our own family. And very often this was start for many to have that conversation. Now I would like to move on to the second topic, identity. It's also a topic that's very important in your biographies. And the idea was that somebody asks a question, and then we move on. Anton Brüggebus had a question on this. Perhaps he could start. And please give us some background about yourself. And please speak clearly and slowly.
Mein Name ist Anton Brüggebus.
I'm Anton Brüggebus. I do a voluntary social service here at the memorial site in Bergen-Belsen.
Meine Frage wäre,
and the question we had in mind was this. In the context of your biography, with all these instances where you had to change your name and your identity, what does identity mean for you and in your life? It is true. This question about identity is essential. And I changed my identities every few years. I started as a Jew in Prague. And as a child, of course, I wasn't really aware of Jews in Prague. We were not very religious, and the fact that we were Jewish didn't play an important part. And I didn't quite understand why we had to leave Prague. But after some time, I realized that we were Jewish refugees in France. And then, when the catastrophe started, I understood what was going on, and then I became a genuine Catholic. I mean, I was 10 years old when I was put in that seminary. I was baptized and so on. I became a Catholic. But then again, after the war, I went back to a Jewish environment, And then I became a communist, and then Zionist. So I was a communist for 3 months. I didn't have the power and the strength to be a real communist. So I stopped with that. And at the age of 15, roughly, I came to Israel. And then I became a true Zionist. But then, of course, things also changed in Israel. But I'm also an Israeli, of course, to some extent. But one thing remained constant throughout all this time, this time of being a refugee, the Shoah, and that was the fact of being Jewish, not in a religious way, but as part of my identity. That is something that continued to exist. All of these changes I described happened more on the surface. But something else stayed on and actually became stronger and stronger. That means I never changed the core. Yes, I did move from becoming somebody else all the time, but there was also something that remained. I was the Jew who was being persecuted. And I became more aware of that fact in the 1960s and after that. So identities change, or at the surface, identities may change, but there is something underneath that you keep.
And
this is really interesting. Because you look at yourself, you realize that there is something like a core identity and other temporary identities. But as you just said, something always remains. I find that a very intriguing thought because we have this debate in Germany about identities. And this is an aspect that should be a part of our discussion. I know that this is a thought that moved many people. Do you have more questions? Please make sure that you use the microphone. Please again state your name and your background. Hello, I'm Nathalie Ellar from Strasbourg, and the Global Centrum of Peace of Verdun helped me to come here. I was also sent here to talk about a project that happens in the burned-down synagogue in Strasbourg. There is a memorial where we state all the names of the Jews who were persecuted. So I'm asking you, what is the name as part of the identity? You've changed your name 3 times, and I would like to know from you whether you think that the name is your identity or whether other aspects play a more important role.
Als Erinnerungs.
Überhaupt. Also was in der Name für
ja.
Die Identität für eine Rolle.
Ja, also die Namen. Ich dachte, als die Diskussion in Deutschland hochging, wie sollte man.
This discussion started in Germany about
öffentlich darstellen.
How the Shoah should be presented.
Was würde man da.
There were all these discussions about how could you build a memorial or something. And back then, and here I'm talking about the late 1980s, early 1990s. And so the idea was to show the names of the millions of people who were killed. That means you would write down the names publicly, and that would serve as a memorial. But then a different decision was taken. In Arlington, in the United States, the name of those who perished in Vietnam and in other wars. Are also used for the memorial, and names are so impressive. You see these people in front of your inner eye when you read the name. I mentioned the second-year-old Jack Vladimirsky and the three-year-old Daniel Schulz, and then this elderly lady who was on the same transport as my parents. And who was among the people who were gassed immediately when they arrived. And I didn't know these names before, like Jack Vladimirsky. But when I prepared my speech, I stumbled over that name. So this name and the fact that he was only 2 years old shook me so much. And if it had been anonymous without the name, I think it wouldn't have touched me to the same extent. That means the name is the identity and also reflects a changing identity. And perhaps it's the most important attribute. You know, I think the question was also whether the fact that you were first named Pavel and today your name is Saul, well, it rhymes, whether it has influenced your identity, although the name Friedlander always stayed, didn't it? No, actually not during the war. I was Paul-Henri Marie. Yes, but that was part of your identity, wasn't it? No. If I had stayed there, the new name would have become my identity. I needed a Catholic name. But I think now I understand your question. Pavel, Paul-Henri Marie, the Catholic version. And now, why Saul? When I came to Israel in June of 1948, somebody asked me, what's your Hebrew name? And I said, I don't have a Hebrew name. But what happens in the Bible is that Saul becomes Paul in the Gospel. And now it's Paul becoming Saul. So I said, my name is Saul, or Shaul in Hebrew. Then later in France, or in Britain, or in America, Shaul is very uncommon, which is why it became Saul. Yes, so names change.
Herzlichen Dank.
Thank you so much.
Wir sind ja schon sehr nah an der Biografie jetzt und
we have moved closer and closer to your biography, and I would like to move on to the next topic that we would like to discuss with you. And that is your biography. Sophie Schwer came up with an introductory question concerning your biography. What are the lessons that you learned? But let me now pass the floor to Sophie. Where is she? Over there. Okay, please don't forget to use a mic and speak up.
Hallo, ich bin Luca Sophie Schwer.
My name is Sophie Schwer. Pax Christi sent me to Berlin on this occasion. And I would like to know, what was the turning point in your life? When did you start to focus on your own history, on your own life? What was the trigger? What was the driving force?
Sie richtig verstehe.
I hope I understood you correctly. But as early as in the 70s, at the beginning of the 70s, not before that, it wasn't possible for me at all to write about my own history. But then I felt the need to tell this story for various different reasons. And I managed to write it down. I found a publisher in Paris whom I sent the manuscript, who was French. I also wrote my biography in French. And he sent me a letter back saying, well, we really like the manuscript. It's very interesting, but there is no life in it. There were no emotions in the text whatsoever. It was not touching or moving at all. It lacked any kind of emotion. And then Mr. Lanzmann, and some of you might know him, who made the film Shoah. He passed away last year, but Claude Lanzmann told me that we should have a dialogue with each other, but that didn't work out either. So how can you bring emotions into your own biography? And then all of a sudden I recalled that I had a friend in the seminary who had become a monk somewhere in the center of France. We had sometimes written letters to each other, so I decided to pay him a visit. He was a trapist and they are not allowed to speak. But he was granted permission to speak to me. And we spent 2 days together. We spoke about the past. When I came back, at this particular time I lived in Geneva, all of a sudden I realized that he never asked me how I came to realize that I was a Jew. That was a topic we've never discussed, so I wrote him a very, very long letter. I wrote a letter to my friend that I got to know during the times of the war. But the letter was never sent because it was the beginning of my autobiography. I had found someone to talk to, somebody who was able to understand me. So I spoke to this friend on a personal note, and this is when emotions conjure up. One additional question, please. Did the questions maybe lead to the fact that the memory was brought to life again? And called to mind, well, if you find somebody that you can really talk to, not necessarily family members, it doesn't work if you try to talk to family members. You made mention of the fact that Bubis and others were not able to speak to their family members for very good reasons. Here I had found someone who had shared the same experience with me. Are there any additional questions on this topic concerning the biography? Please.
Okay, sorry. Das Mikro ist, glaube ich, das nächste.
Hallo, ich bin Paula.
Hello, my name is Paula. I'm doing a voluntary service in France at the Memorial Site Ora di Saglen. And I would like to ask you the following question. When you wrote your autobiography, you were a child when you had to experience all these terrible events, and you tried to keep your memory alive. You said that in the course of the discussion, many of your memories were brought to life again. When you spoke to people who shared the same experience, or when you went to different sites in order to call your mind the memories of the experience that you made when you were a young child. Or maybe you try to find evidence in order to furnish proof for the fact that your memories were really in line with what you had gone through as a child.
Wissen Sie, wenn man einmal,
you know,
den Punkt findet, wo man
once you get to that point where you really feel what your memories are like. The memory was always there, but it meant very little to me. But all of a sudden, the same events and incidents were called to mind and brought to life, and this, of course, triggered a lot of the emotions that were tied to these events. Let me just give you one example. I all of a sudden remembered each and every single incident. I can give you a whole plethora of different examples. But every single incident was leading to a very difficult situation to deal with and to cope with. I became a sleepwalker, and I was really ashamed of that. I was 10 years of age then, but you know, at night, I crawled out of my bed and I walked around while sleeping. And I tried to put an end to that. I really tried to force myself. So I tied myself to the belt with my belt. I fixated myself to the bed because I didn't want to get up out of my bed at night. But you know, we had to go to the religious service early in the morning, so I had to untie myself as quickly as possible, although I had tied myself to the bed in a rather complicated fashion. I had to untie the knots. But you know, these are small incidents which are not really all that meaningful, but it means quite a lot to a child at the age of 10. And I can tell you lots and lots of stories, of course not today, but there are many of these incidents that I could share with you because it is all part and parcel of my trauma, every single incident. You know, when the mail was distributed, I lived at the seminary with 50 other young boys. All of them were your rather pious, and they strongly believed in Christian principles. And once a week, the lady that was working at the seminary came along with a mail. After a couple of weeks, I realized that I was not going to get any letter at all. But hadn't I ran over to the lady with all the other boys, full of expectation to receive a letter, they would have known. But they didn't know that I was a Jew. They knew that I came from the Czech Republic and that I was one of the infidels who was baptized for one reason or another. But they were not supposed to know that I was Jewish, because otherwise they would have told their family members, they would have spread the news, and then I would have been in serious trouble. So I always ran over to the ladies distributing the mail, although I really knew I was not going to get a letter. When you're 11 or 12 years of age, that's quite something, something that you will never forget. And I have a lot of other memories of this particular kind, and then all of a sudden, emotions were attached to them. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions in this context? My name is Marian Neubauer. I'm doing a voluntary service in the Museum and Commemorative Site in Sachsenhausen, close to Berlin. My question is rather short. How long did it take you to write your books and write your biographies, and were there certain periods of time when you had to take a break because it was simply too much of a burden?
You know,
reason why I had pushed the topic out of my mind was really that I found it all too shameful without knowing why. But let me give an example to explain why it is so difficult to retrieve these memories emotionally. My parents were detained in Saint-Jean-Golf, had been detained by the Swiss border police. Saint-Jean-Golf is 30 kilometers from Geneva, where I later taught at the university. Or first I wrote my PhD there, and later I worked in Geneva as a university lecturer. And I never went to Saint-Jean-Golf, although I knew about this historical fact. I was there for 17 years and never went. Now, you might say it would have been the obvious thing to do, to go there first thing in the morning, but I never considered it. And I think that just shows that there was a certain block. And only when I met Georges Arnaud, all of this started coming back with the emotions, and then I went to Saint-Jean-Golf and also to other places where I had lived before to see what they were like today. And all of that was really helpful. But this made my whole memory come back. But the emotional part is the most fundamental part in all of this. Thank you.
Weil Sie ja heute in Ihrer Rede haben Sie
today in your speech,
begonnen mit sozusagen Ihrer
Auseinandersetzung by talking about the causes of the Holocaust. And only then moved on to your biography. We spoke about biographies and scientific work yesterday, and somebody had a very interesting question that Jan Dohrmann would like to repeat now.
Guten Tag, mein Name ist Jan Dohrmann.
Hello, I'm Jan Dohrmann.
Student an der Universität Bremen.
I'm a student at Bremen University. And I study history. I have a question to you, Mr. Friedlander.
Ihre Geschichte als,
to what extent
NS-Überlebender, NS-Verfolgter,
did your
Auswirkungen auf ihre
history as an SS survivor,
andersrum, wie hat ihre Arbeit how,
to what extent does it impact your work as a historian? And how does your work as an historian impact the way you research your own history? You know, that is a problem that I had to grapple with my whole life. People kept always asking me, how can somebody who's so personally involved be a historian in the way that you have a certain distance? And people seem to think that this can't go together. And I can tell that from the questions that I got, or I always got the same question and had to respond to it. I think if I hadn't had that personal experience in my own life, I would never have become a good historian, not on this particular topic, because we're talking about a catastrophic historical period, a very short period, as you know. And that is nothing that you can consider from this perspective of long durée, long term. as a part of a social history. This is not the way it works in this case. You have to find a certain attitude inside you to describe this whole machinery in an objective way, the machinery of extermination, as the president called it. You have to analyze that machinery. But you also have to look at the fate of the victims, and you have to make their voices a part of it. How else could you write about how people were murdered in Stalin's gulag? How could you do that without making the victims heard? It has to be a history encompassing the feelings of the victims. That's the only way to do it. And at the same time, you have to take a certain distance and you have to analyze events. Doing both things at the same time is incredibly difficult. And I believe I was able to do it to a certain extent. But without my personal experience, I think this is a very hard thing to do. Does anybody have more questions on this?
Gerne wieder am Mikro.
Hallo, ich bin Sophia Anweiler und ich bin
Hallo,
hier aus Hamburg.
Sophia Anweiler from Hamburg.
In der KZ-Gedenkstätte Neuengamme.
I work
arbeite.
At the und, former concentration camp in Neuengamme as, a, as an assistant. The president
schon an,
of the Bundestag said this morning
und Perspektivenwechsel,
that you
zu wahren,
were trying to show the different perspectives
haben,
and to also still maintain the bewilderment in the face of what happened. I would like to know whether this approach also triggered some scientific debates, or how have people responded to this approach of yours? I'm not sure I really understood your question. I understand that it's about the question was whether your approach also influence the scientific discourse. I mean, of course, I had read and studied all the literature on this topic, and I know it's part of the debate. And I had this debate with Martin Brochard, the director of the Institute for Contemporary History in Munich. We had a very controversial discussion about all of these questions. So I think at the time I really was aware of the ongoing debates about this part of history, the National Socialist era and the Holocaust. So knowing the debate was one thing. The question was, how do you try to contribute this other perspective? And the question was whether your particular approach also led to new debates. You know, for me,
wechselhaft, aber ich glaube, beide Seiten mehr oder weniger verstanden.
I think, although people responded very differently, but there were people who had an understanding for my approach. Of course, you can always argue about objectivity, but as I said before, I know that my approach is open for discussion. So I understand that there were some people saying that because your own biography was linked to the events, your scientific work might not be objective. Oh yes, this was a very common insinuation or reproach. Any other questions on this relationship between science and personal history? Okay, if there aren't any questions here. Oh, there's something that just comes to my mind. Could I please add something? You know, the historians who used to work on this topic in Germany. And that was also part of my debate with Borchardt. Borchardt, as turned out after his death, had been a party member of the National Socialist Party. And he had been a member of the Hitlerjugend and then also joined the party at a late stage. So even the German historians of my generation, for many years, had to deal with this burden of the National Socialist era. And for many years, as President Schäuble said, they tried to suppress that part of their history because they'd been involved. My generation, they were all at some point boys, same age like me, but they also grew up during the Third Reich, and they were also involved, although of course they didn't want to know about it after the war. That means there is subjectivity on both sides. Yes, maybe I was subjective, but they were too. And that's what I wrote to Mr. Borchardt, because he had also sent me a letter. We exchanged three letters. And these letters were later published in the quarterly journals for contemporary history. And here's what he wrote. You have to respect the memory of the victims. So, respect to you, Mr. Friedlander. But it's a mythical memory. And that is a problem for us German historians. Perhaps there is something that we can learn from that memory, but it is an obstacle to objective historical work the way we do it. So that's what he said from his point of view. And here was my response to him. Look, I think you just exposed your own views. So we have that mythical memory, and you're the rational historian. I mean, you were in the Hitlerjugend. And then later it came out that he was even a party member. So I'd rather say that both sides have their prejudices. Of course, we don't know what will happen with future generations.
Hochspannendes Thema, hochspannendes Thema.
Very exciting topic.
Ich würde jetzt
this really is a very exciting topic.
Wir haben über Individuelle.
Now we spoke about personal individual identity.
Einige von euch gestern beschäftigte war natürlich
topic
das Thema nationale
that some of you wanted to discuss yesterday in the course of our meeting was the national
Mielke
identity.
Lorenz Mielke an Herrn Schäuble
has a question to Dr.
Ja,
Schäuble.
Hallo, ich heiße
hello.
Lorenz Mielke.
Lorenz Mielke is my name.
Ich bin Botschafter des Anne-Frank-Zentrums.
I'm an
genau, und in meiner Frage geht es um den Begriff der
and my question deals with the national
ja,
identity.
In Deutschland,
in Germany, in particular, due to the dark chapter of our history, this is a very delicate issue. To which extent, when you try to come to terms with the NS regime, does it have a major repercussion? Is national identity something that we should refuse to accept? Or when trying to come to terms with it, does this give us the opportunity to define our national identity afresh? It's not easy to talk about the national identity. But each and every person has certain experiences that coin us, frame us.
Für die Zukunft sehr außergewöhnliche Biografie
Professor Dr. Friedländer has a very extraordinary biography, which very much influenced his personal identity. That's one thing. And he said something that had always been very important to him was the fact that he was part of humanity that was persecuted and expelled. That always impressed him throughout his entire life.
Das ist das Erste. Das Zweite ist,
this had left a mark behind. That is one thing. The second point is, in order to organize peaceful coexistence amongst human beings, you have to create communities that can be developed in various different forms.
But
for many centuries, they have emerged in Europe and also going beyond it.
Art zusammenleben, dass dann irgendwann sowas
communities have been developed, which sooner or later have turned into nations.
Das ist nun von der Vergangenheit nicht zu lösen.
This is something that cannot be
deswegen
separated from the past.
Für mich ist einer der wichtigen Sätze.
That is why one of the most important sentences.
Dem Historiker Fritz Stern.
That I've heard.
Fritz Stern war
being uttered by the historian Fritz Stern, a very important historian, a German whose family immigrated to the US in the early 30s.
Und der sich dann auch mit der deutschen Geschichte sehr beschäftigt hat.
He really zoomed in on the German history. He also spoke to us in the German Bundestag. I met him several times. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago, being pretty old. But back then, he spoke about the National Day of Commemoration in the Federal Republic of Germany, the 17th of June, if you remember correctly. And he said that Germany was given a second chance. If you look at history, and I'm deeply convinced of that, back in 1945,
als Nation nicht mehr sehr viel was dafür sprach, das ist
as a nation, there was not a lot to indicate that we were going to survive, but we were given a second chance. Why? Because those against whom the war was waged, against whom we had fought in the war, had become much smarter than they had been at the end of the First World War. Because slowly but surely, we had learned in the course of history, and this is one of the greatest achievements of Konrad Adenauer. But he knew that if at all we were only going to get back on our feet, if we as Germans would try to do everything in our power to become a member of the Western Alliance. This is what happened in the beginning. And what happened afterwards is something that you can observe when you look at this particular neighborhood. there was a heated debate in the old Federal Republic of Germany. When the wall came down, Germany was reunified. And the question was, should the capital be transferred from Bonn to Berlin? People had always said, well, as long as Germany is divided and Berlin cannot be the capital any longer, Bonn would be the preliminary capital. But once Germany was reunified, the majority of the people said, no, let's stay in Bonn. We can't move to Berlin. And there was the Brandenburg Gate. The former president of the Federal Republic of Germany, Richard von Weizsäcker, always said, well, the German question is still open. Some people said back in the 70s, no, two German states, everything's fine. But Richard von Weizsäcker always said, the German question remains unanswered as long as the Brandenburg Gate is closed. Ronald Reagan, just to remind you of it, a couple of years before the wall came down, said, Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate, tear down this wall. And many back then in Bonn said, oh, he shouldn't have said that. This wasn't such a good idea. Hadn't we decided to move the capital from Bonn to Berlin once again?
Vieles von dem, was uns mit der Wiedervereinigung geschenkt wurde, falsch gemacht.
We would have made a lot of mistakes, especially with a view to the things that we were really granted as a consequence of German unification. And then we had another discussion, you know, a discussion about the memorial to the murdered Jews of Europe. And in the middle of the discussion, there were people who said yes and no and no and yes. There was a lot of toing and froing. We did a lot of mistakes, but we made a couple of things the right way. And that's part of the story. This is how things develop. And now we argue about this once again. It will continue to be that way, mind you. But you manage to see for yourselves that today nobody dares to say, come on, it is not valid. It doesn't work. All the members of the parliament stood up and gave him standing ovations after Professor Dr. Friedländer's speech. That is the best way of expressing your appreciation. There are things that are worse than that. Thank you very much. Question to Professor Dr. Friedländer.
Wenn Sie gefragt werden nach Ihrer nationalen Identität,
when you're being asked about your own national identity,
gibt es da auch solche
your own personal history, are there any points of approximations or any changes? Or is it an integral part and parcel of your identity? Do you have a national identity as this, that, or the other, I'm asking?
A
couple of years ago, somebody asked me this question. And my reply back then was nothing that I had really thought about for a long period of time, but I reacted rather immediately by saying, I'm a Jew that has managed to get through the Shoah. That is my particular identity and has been for a long time and it will continue to be so until the end of my life. I'm an Israeli, I have an Israeli passport, an American passport, and let's keep it that way. I could have a French passport if I wanted to, but no, that's enough. All this is a rather superficial way of looking at it. Fundamentally speaking, I was a young boy who managed to get through the Shoah. And that is my identity. That's what it's all about. It's nothing that you can hand over to somebody else. It has a lot to do with your own fate. And I understand very well where the difficulties come from. That sometimes surface here in Germany when people try to come to terms with the past. And also today, if I understand you correctly, the NS past has become part and parcel of your national history with all the terrible atrocities and dark chapters that this included, but not within the family. You know, I still rely on this sociological work. My grandfather was not a Nazi. I just remember the title of this book. You know, victims, yes, but perpetrators, no, not within our own family. I understand where these feelings come from. Of course, I do not subscribe to this particular point of view, but for some people, it's simply impossible to say, well, my grandfather or grandfather was also a member of the party of the NS. It's almost impossible to say that. So there are a lot of questions that come up in this context. Maybe the president will say that the opposite is the case, and I would really like to hear what your take on this is. But this book really impressed me a lot. Opa war kein Nazi. My grandfather was not a Nazi. I have the impression
that
since the 60s, a growing number of people coming from the young generation have asked their parents about this period of time. Yes, the students, but not only the students. They asked their parents, well, what did you do back then? So this is why I think that with regards to the coming generation,
well,
depending on the way in which you look at it, but I'm also part of the generation of the 60s. And I think I was rather lucky that my father, for one reason or another, did not at all have anything to do with the Nazis before they came to power. But my mother's father, my grandfather, did not like the Nazis at all either. But my mother was very much interested in the Nazis when they came to power. But we were lucky. I think the majority of young people today know that it is part and parcel of the history of our families. It's part of our history as a nation.
And
I think I would like to call upon you not to forget about it. Our grandparents or grandparents were probably not that much different to us. They were not that different from us. This is exactly also the way how we would behave. But we didn't have to go through these dark chapters of history, but I think that your question was aiming at a totally different point. Professor Dr. Friedländer lived a very special life, and this is why, of course, he had to give you this answer. My personal history is far less dramatic. This is why I gladly answer the question concerning the national identity by quoting Richard Schröder. Richard Schröder was a theologian. He was a chairman of the SPD in the People's Chamber that was freely elected. And he said, being German is very special. No, sorry, but being German is something particular, but nothing special, just like being French. And then it has nothing to do with the national interest. It is something particular, but nothing special. When I was younger, I had a professor who was a political scientist, and his opinion was that national identity does not really exist. And then I asked him, and the young lady from Strasbourg might agree with me in this regard. My constituency is close to Strasbourg, so we are basically neighbors. My generation in the Elsass speaks a similar dialect compared to the people living in the region. But if Germany plays soccer against France, then I can't tell you why, but I love Zidane a lot as a great player. You know, and I watched the handball match on Sunday playing for the bronze medal, and I was hoping that the German team would win. When somebody asked me, well, why, I wasn't able to reply. And Professor Oberndörfer, and that was the name of my professor, by the way, he's still alive, so that's still his name. But I said, when Germany plays against France, when they play soccer against each other, which team are you in favor of? And he said, what a daft question. But why? And now one additional remark as a representative of my generation. When Germany, the western part of Germany, the soccer nation, in 1954 became the world champion in Bern, Switzerland, I can tell you exactly who played in which particular position. Gerhard Schröder, who was a couple of years younger than me, he said that he was able to tell you exactly which player played in which particular position. And I'm older than him, but this older generation, all of a sudden felt something that felt a bit like, well, our nation knows how to play soccer. Of course, you have to have something that makes you particular. That's the danger of globalization. If you don't feel at home anywhere in this world, and many scholars at this day and age are saying that there is a danger that we might become prone to new temptations, and now this danger is much stronger than it would be if you didn't knew where we were coming from. Where do we come from? Auschwitz. So therefore, when I'm saying that a speech like the one that Professor Dr. Friedländer delivered today, telling us how Jewish children and families felt like in France, should not be delivered by our German colleagues, but we should leave this up to our French colleagues, and there are still a lot of speakers on our list.
Look at the Uhr. Ich mag gar nicht aufhören zu diskutieren und zu hören, was
so
ihr
many more questions
für Fragen stellt und diese ungeheuer
and I'm really enjoying this discussion.
But now with view to time, Rede,
I would like to address another topic that you
als, Gruppe, die mentioned in your speech hat, das Thema
and that we have thought about in the last 2 days. And that's growing antisemitism.
Was man dagegen tun kann.
And it's also about the question, what can
Neubauer
be done about it?
Ihre Frage Neubauer zu stellen has und a question on this. Dann auch vielleicht, wenn wir sozusagen nicht nur angesichts der fortgeschrittenen Zeit
and since
fragen,
we are running out of time,
was, wo stehen wir jetzt, sondern auch dann in die Antworten
I think we should not just take stock of the situation, but we should really focus on what we can do.
Ja, also ich hatte mich vorhin schon vorgestellt.
As I introduced myself before,
wie Sie, vor dem Hintergrund Ihrer persönlichen
and
Erfahrung
yes,
die
we were wondering against backdrop of your personal history, how big do you think is the danger connected to anti-Semitic incidents?
Ich kann wenig dazu sagen, weil ich
it's very hard for me to comment because I don't live here and I don't have any personal experience with this new wave of anti-Semitism. If it exists, I suppose it does. And then when it comes to the question of what can be done, I could say that I think what you're doing here is part of the answer.
Antworten können, weil
but the Bundestag president can say much more about this because he knows the situation much better than I do. He knows whether it's serious or more serious than it seems and what to do about it. I'm only a guest. And I see certain developments in the US, but then the US is not Germany. I think there are two parts to the answer.
Die eine ist in meiner aus der Erfahrung meines Lebens
based
eine, jedenfalls über Jahrzehnte sehr
on the experience
deutsche.
I've had in my life.
Jude war
my
für uns
view
lange
is very
etwas,
German.
Das wir gar nicht kannten.
Jews for a long time
wenn
were something that we didn't really
aufgewachsen sind
know
im
anything about. If you grew up like in the Black Forest like I did.
Haben Sie in den 50er
in the 1950s, 60s,
selten jüdische Menschen erlebt.
You rarely met Jewish people.
Ermordet,
because they'd all been murdered.
Gerade noch irgendwie.
And those who hadn't
inzwischen
weren't really in that area.
Wird es eher wieder etwas Selbstverständliches, dass es auch
since then,
in Deutschland Juden und jüdisches
it
Leben
has slowly
aber es ist noch
become more natural to have Jewish
so
life in Germany, but it's nothing that
und da, daraus
we can take for granted.
Alte, überlieferte Ressentiments. Dann gibt es auch eine,
and this
eine Art
spurs part of the resentment.
Dummes Zeug nachzureden, ohne darüber nachzudenken.
Some people just say, you know, stupid things without
das ist das eine Element.
Reflecting
das andere
much on what they say.
Ist mindestens genauso wichtig.
But then there is something else that is at least as important.
Ich war ja schon in den 80er Jahren Mitglied der Bundesregierung.
I still remember well the 1980s when I was already a member of the German government.
Vertreter der jüdischen Gemeinschaft.
And very often the representatives of the Jewish communities came to see me. They came from Germany, they came from the US, and they kept asking, do you think you do enough to stop xenophobia?
Und um Fremdenfeindlichkeit.
So they didn't specifically talk about anti-Semitism, but xenophobia.
Ja schon
xenophobia was on the rise.
Aus der Türkei, später aus anderen Ländern.
First people had come from Turkey, later from other countries.
And
I'll never forget that these Jewish representatives always only spoke about xenophobia or discrimination of minorities, because they said, this is how it starts.
Jetzt haben wir natürlich noch einen neuen Antisemitismus, der wird aus dem fanatischen
now,
Teil des Islam.
There is a new type of antisemitism that comes from certain Muslim groups, and it's comparable to what happens in France.
Der Kern ist, dass wir Menschen nicht, weil sie
what matters is that
eigentlich sind wir alle Minderheiten.
We acknowledge that we are all a minority. I mean, I'm a Protestant
as
a minority in Germany. I'm a member of the CDU.
Wir sind alle immer Minderheit.
I grew up in the Black Forest.
Aber wir sind vor allen Dingen Menschen.
But all of these counts, I'm a member of a minority. But most of all, we are all human beings. I'm disabled. That's obvious. A wheelchair is the symbol of somebody being disabled.
Wie sich Behinderte fühlen. Ich habe es vorher überhaupt
and
nicht.
Now, being affected by this myself, I have a much better
jetzt
understanding of
immer,
what it means
wenn ich unter Behinderten
to be disabled.
Bin.
And when I'm among people with disabilities, I keep telling people, you know, everybody has disabilities.
Ist.
Our advantage as somebody who is officially disabled is that we know that we are. And the other people
Grund
simply aren't aware of their disability. But all of that is no reason for being
und
discriminated
nun,
against.
Da, glaub ich, sind wir auch bei der Frage, haben die Menschen
and that takes us back to this question.
Do
people have a sense of belonging? Normally in a family,
sieht,
parents
Kinder,
look after their kids.
Mit Kindern, die
and I think
umgehen.
Integration and inclusion are very
Freude.
Important, for
wenn
example,
wir lernen,
in schools.
Selbstverständlich. Wenn wir mal älter sind, werden wir schwieriger.
It's something that we have to learn when we're still young, because it's
fest.
Much more difficult when you're older and have your habits.
In Deutschland habe ich immer, ich habe lange Zeit geglaubt, wir hatten
in Germany,
in den letzten
you know,
Jahrzehnten
for a long time,
in manchen europäischen
I
Ländern,
used to think in the last few decades
auch solche Bewegungen rechtsextrem
that there were these
also
right-wing movements in other countries.
Mit allem Respekt,
there's Le Pen in France.
Schon lange.
And with all due respect,
Vater
the Le Pen family
Madame
has been around for a long time.
Hat auch schon über 20% der Wahlen bekommen. War sogar einmal in einem zweiten Wahlgang einer französischen Präsidentschaftswahl.
Won 20% of the vote and made it to the second round of the presidential elections.
Und ich habe immer gedacht, in Deutschland passiert das nicht mehr.
Jacques Chirac was elected. And I would always have thought it would never happen again in Germany. Because, I mean, just look over there. There is the Holocaust Memorial, Brandenburg Gate. We thought it would never happen again. But now it seems that 70 years are so long.
Ja, die Jungen müssen immer es besser machen als die Alten.
that things might change. Young people always think that they'll do it better than the previous generation.
Lernen, was sie vermeiden können, was sie
but at the same time, they could learn from our past what they should avoid. If we allow minorities to be discriminated against, that's a problem. And it's terrible when I hear news that on a train somebody gets beaten, and there are so many bystanders, and they don't help. It's like in the exhibition Somewhere Neighbors, people are always afraid they'll be in trouble themselves.
Täter und Opfer nur Deutsche, wo Junge, die vielleicht ein bisschen viel getrunken haben, und dann ein anderer
and
hat
this happens hat in any type of environment. There might all be Germans, different groups of Germans. They get in trouble, there's a brawl, but other people just turn a blind eye or walk away. So, yeah, Somewhere Neighbors. Just look
lassen
at that.
Sie nicht zu, wo Sie können nicht auf, ich fordere nicht auf.
I ask you to not let Suizid. These things happen. I'm not asking you to be aber suicidal, but
wir könnten ein bisschen, ein klein wenig Zivilcourage.
There is
immer
this little bit of civil courage
helfen
that we should all display.
Im Bundestag hatte niemand
that would help a lot
Courage
today.
Nach der Rede von Herrn Friedländer nicht aufzustehen.
At the Bundestag, nobody had the courage to remain seated ja after Mr. Friedländer's
ja
speech.
Ja. Das kann man, wenn man, aber das heißt, wir müssen auch, manche sagen, Gesicht zeigen.
That means we have to show our face. We have to interfere when other people are being attacked.
Was soll das? Es sind fast immer andere dabei.
And very often there are people standing by. As I said, they look to the other side. But that's not what we should do.
Und es ist nicht.
Let's not look away. And after all, chances aren't that slim that we can do things better than in the past because we know more.
Also wir haben jetzt 3 Minuten vor der Zeit,
we
aber ich habe so den
minutes
Eindruck,
left.
Dass das, was der Präsident gerade
my impression is
mit auf den Weg gegeben
that
hat,
what
auch
the President
eine
just said
sehr schöne Zusammenfassung
is
von dem
a very
ist, was
good
wir in den letzten
summary
Tagen auch miteinander gemacht haben.
What we have discussed
Höhepunkt
in the last
ist
few
natürlich
days
immer die Diskussion mit dem Hauptredner in diesem Fall von Herrn
of course
Friedländer
today and this day
nicht nur
is a real highlight, also our discussion with Mr. Friedländer,
mit
not
Madame
only
Weisbau,
because we have looked at similar biographies like that of
haben, sondern,
Ms.
Weisbord, Kindern, von, Hans Rosenthal,
but also with the children of Hans Rosenthal, his daughter is here
sondern
today.
Auch dann unter dem Eindruck der Rede nochmal das, was wir eigentlich vorher uns überlegt haben,
but we're still under the impression of
also an dieser Stelle
the speeches that were given this morning.
Und, sehr herzlich
let me now take this opportunity to thank the President of the German Bundestag and Mr. Friedländer. This was a truly unique experience.
Sich mit dem Programm befassen und, das
I think
und dann merkt
that
man,
is true for everyone who participated
das
in this program.
Gute Früchte getragen hat und, daher
and I'm sure
ganz herzlichen
that
Dank
all of this will bear fruit.
Ja.
Die Frau von Herrn Friedländer sitzt auch hier oben.
Und eine Familie. Herr
Friedländers wife is also here, sitting upstairs. And more members of the family too. Thank you all for being here. And now, let him reunite with his family.
Ich glaube, Sie können das Gefühl mitnehmen, das war hat uns viel gegeben. Hat uns viel gegeben. Und ich höre auch an der Reaktion von vielen, die in der Gedenkstunde waren, dass sie doch so waren. Nein, nur wir haben zu danken. Nur wir haben zu danken. Eine große Anstrengung für Sie. Aber es war es wert. Bitte. Bitte. Ja. US.